Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hello. Good morning. Welcome. My number is 888-914-9149. I know that you regulars know that already, but just FYI, 888-914-9149. I'll be getting your calls in a minute. Cyrus, I think this is the third such incident that I have noticed in the news in the last, couple of months. An off-duty pilot who was a passenger on a Southwest Airlines flight, he had to step into action and go into the flight deck and help with the flying of the plane because one of the on-duty pilots had a sudden medical emergency in flight. And I don't like stuff like that at all.
So these people are they're in the air and the pilot has an emergency?
What? Mm-hmm.
Tell me more.
Well, he didn't die suddenly, and I don't know because I haven't seen any further news on this particular incident that took place. When was this? This was yesterday. This was yesterday. I saw it yesterday. I thought it was the day before. And so here's how it's reported by CNN. An off-duty pilot who was a passenger on a Southwest Airlines flight from from Las Vegas to Columbus, Ohio. The flight had already taken off, flight 6013, and one of the pilots needed medical attention, the airline said. And a credentialed pilot from another airline who just happened to be on board, he entered the flight deck and assisted with radio communications while the Southwest pilot flew the aircraft. Whoa. And the spokesman for the airline said, "We greatly appreciate their support and assistance." Didn't say he. It's okay. A nurse who was also on board helped care for the pilot, the airline said, without releasing further details on the pilot's condition. You'd think that's the kind of thing they would want to release as quickly as possible to reassure the flying public. The a member of the flight crew is heard saying in air traffic control audio from liveatc.net, "The captain became incapacitated while en route. He's in the back of the aircraft right now with a flight attendant, but we need to get him on an ambulance immediately."
That is so scary.
Data from the flight tracking site FlightAware. I use FlightAware. It's a fascinating tool. I enjoy looking at it. It shows that the plane was in the air for about an hour and 17 minutes. And after flying an hour and 17 minutes east toward Columbus, Ohio, they turned around and they went back to Las Vegas. The FAA says it will investigate the incident. I bet they will. But I wonder if they'll tell us what actually is the cause.
You do not know what you are talking about.
Well, I haven't even said anything yet.
You do not know what you are talking about.
Well, give me some time here. I'm just looking for information is all. I mean, you fly, Cyrus, I fly. Pretty much everybody flies at one point or another. And it's important to know why these pilots have had what seems to be. Now, maybe statistics would show that it's not really a spike in this kind of thing, but it seems to be like all of a sudden in the last few months, maybe it's just that we're hearing more about it. Maybe that's it. It's possible.
Absolutely but not.
What could be the cause of that? What could be the cause of it? That's what I'm curious about. Any theories, Cyrus?
Varies from candidate to candidate.
Mm-hmm. Here's one thing about pilots.
No, you misconstrued that, Senator.
Well,
and you've done that repetitively in the past.
I have not been elected to public office, so don't give me titles I don't have.
Find out the answer to those questions.
I'm looking
through
for the
clinical trials and the follow-up of the clinical trials.
I'm trying. If you'd let me get a word in edgewise.
Yeah, I kicked them out.
I don't know. How does he forge the electronic key cards to get in here?
Well, that's what he spends all his time doing. That's why we don't see him on the news anymore. Because he's always trying to break into,
I guess,
into the studio.
Well, I'm just looking for answers. I'm just a simple man. And I like to know what's going on, especially if I happen to be in an aircraft. Here's something I was going to say, that I like aviation. I'm interested in aviation. I'm interested in pretty much, like, if I ever meet a pilot, I'll talk his ear off. Really, I'll ask him to do all the talking because I'm interested in that world. I find it fascinating. And one thing I know from knowing a lot of these commercial airline pilots, and by a lot, I guess I could say I know maybe personally, I know maybe 5 or 6 commercial airline pilots, or have known them over the years. And one thing that they've told me is that this is not only a highly regulated industry, but also you can't get up there in the cockpit and fly a commercial aircraft unless you have been medically, psychologically checked out frequently to make sure that you are in tip-top condition to be able to fly. So, I mean, sure, there will always be stories, no matter how far back you go, about pilots who have some sort of distress or some even die, perhaps. But since COVID and since the the forced immunizations, and pilots had to do this or they would not be able to work, same with flight attendants. And it just raises the question. It's not an unreasonable question to ask, is that possibly the cause for some of these guys and gals, perhaps, if any of the affected pilots lately have been women, if it's traceable back to that. If it's not, let's say it's not. Let's find out and say it publicly, loudly, so that everybody knows, so we don't have to worry about that. But the thing that I find bothersome is when it just goes silent and they don't release the information and they don't say and they don't. I would think that they would want to very adamantly disprove the notion or the concern that it's related to the COVID vaccine. It's not a vaccine, my friend will shout. I get it. I understand. But does that make sense, Cyrus? Is that unreasonable, do you think, to just wonder, can we at least eliminate that as a possible cause? If it is not a cause, can we eliminate that? And if it is a cause, then we have to really start thinking carefully about such things.
Yeah, it seemed like that would be one of the important things that the Pfizers and Modernas would be doing is laying that rumor, that conspiracy to rest.
You'd think.
But that hasn't been done. But now people are catching on and no one wants to get their fourth or fifth booster. And so they're going to raise the prices of getting a booster to, like, it's over, what, $150 for a shot?
Yeah, we talked about the Moderna vaccine price. It's not a vaccine, my friend is saying to me. I know. From now on, I'm just going to use the term as shorthand. They're raising the price, and this is in the midst of the possible government bailout after they made, what was it? What insane amount of money, like $200 billion in 1 year? And they're going to get a bailout? That's according to the Wall Street Journal.
It's insane.
I don't get it. But all I'm asking, and this is an honest, sincere request of the FAA, of the airlines, of whoever, the government, you name it. At least if there is just zero connection, if there's zero correlation between the pilots who all had to be vaxxed or they couldn't fly, they'd lose their jobs. If there's no connection between that and these pilots dying, like just a few months ago, I think it was, there was another flight, I think it was American Airlines, two pilots took off from Chicago O'Hare to come to Columbus, and they get 15, 16, 17 minutes in the air, and the captain dies. He's at the controls. He's talking to the tower. He's interacting with his first officer. He's doing all the things that airline pilots do. Next thing you know, his head slumps over, and he dies on the spot. And so, thankfully, the first officer safely lands the plane, and I'm not sure if he told the people what was going on at the time. Hey, we got to go back to the airport. Got a situation. You never want to hear that. So if this is not in any way related to the vaccines, let's find out about that, shall we? And then people can worry about what it might be if it's not that. Maybe the vetting procedures are too lax. I don't think so. Maybe they're not getting their annual physicals or six-month physicals like they should be. I doubt that that's happening. But if we can, as Dr. Fauci says, you know, you do not know what you're talking about, okay, well, then let's get that data out there and show conclusively it's not related to this, because people can be relieved if that's the case. We still have the problem. They would still wonder, why is this happening? And by golly, we have to find out why that's happening and fix whatever that problem is. So that's my take on it. I just want to know. I just want information, one way or the other.
Well, Senator Rand Paul talked to the president of Moderna. And, I mean, this is a quote. "I spoke with the president of Moderna just last week, and he readily acknowledged that there is an increased risk of myocarditis."
Mm-hmm. That's inflammation. I think that's inflammation of the heart.
Yeah, that's why it's the assumed reason why these people are falling over. Like, everybody knows about the Monday Night Football guy who fell after a play. And you got these pilots. We've seen it with newscasters.
Yeah.
Falling over. It's happening with young children.
Well, athletes,
perfectly healthy people.
Yeah.
That really had no business getting the shot anyway. If you're at risk, and it makes sense. Like, I can understand.
You do not know what you're talking about.
I understand some of the reasons.
Don't you understand that by now, Cyrus? Yeah. You're asking, you have wrong thoughts.
Well, that's not.
You're thinking
you're
not
wrong there. Yeah, I don't know what I'm talking about is true. But I have questions, and I'm seeing patterns.
Exactly. Exactly. And you can't blame people for saying, "No, wait a minute. Is there a cause and effect relationship here? It kind of looks like that." And there's a logical fallacy, post hoc ergo propter hoc. In Latin, you translate that to mean because it came after this thing, therefore it was caused by this thing. And that's often not the case. Often there is no correlation. Just because something happened, it's not necessarily caused by the thing before it, but it could be. So that's all I'm saying, and that's all I hear you saying, Cyrus, is we just want to know. That's all, because if you get on an airplane, you want a reasonable expectation that people who are flying the airplane are not going to just suddenly die.
I hope and pray I'm wrong. Almost every single person I love has at least two shots.
Yeah.
Almost all of them.
Most of the people.
Most of them. So I want to be wrong. Please, please let me be wrong.
If I had the power, I would let you be wrong, but... like you, I just want to know. So that's it. I just wanted to report on that story. And I know, Cyrus, we have people who are interested in reading it. This is from CNN. You can check it out. And when I say that, what I mean is Cyrus will post it on the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick. Just click on the, scroll down a bit and you'll see it on the right side. And it may be useful. I think I'm going to circle back, Cyrus, as the people say, to a couple of my airline friends and find out from these pilots what they think about this. That'd be interesting. I'll report back what I find out when I do that. So, yeah, I hate to start with a story like that, but it's important. It's that important. I guess I'd put it that way. 888-914-9149. Let's switch gears. Let's go to Jackie now in Newport, Rhode Island. Hi, Jackie.
Good morning, Patrick. Yes. I have a friend best friend who's Protestant, and I'm planning on visiting her in Georgia. Okay. And I explained to her that we need to find a Catholic church for a Saturday evening or a Sunday morning. And she's gotten a little agitated and, you know, "Well, I didn't realize you had those restrictions while traveling." And I said, "Well, you know, we Catholics take very seriously commandment number 2. Mm-hmm. So I really need a good, a loving response. I've found a couple of churches that are reasonable. I'm not renting the car because the airfare itself is already high. And as a longtime friend, I thought, you know, maybe she would be, you know, okay with taking me to Mass."
My question, yeah. Jackie, if I can interject here, is she hesitant because she had things planned that morning and that will disrupt her plans? Or is she hesitant because she really doesn't like the fact that you go to the Catholic Church anyway? Is it a benign reason, or is it more that she just would rather you not go to a Catholic church, and that's what's bothering her, as she said?
She just does not understand what we believe, and, you know, has obviously been indoctrinated as many Protestants, and, you know, that we certainly don't know what we're that we're not following the right path. So mm-hmm. she's a very strong Protestant, and I'm perfectly willing to go to join her at her service, you know, as a friend.
Oh, she doesn't want to take you to the Catholic Church because that means she would have to sit through a Catholic Mass?
No, I don't think she would go in, but okay. I'm asking for the ride. It's 15 miles away. She just said, you know, I encourage you to pray about this. I was unaware of these restrictions while traveling, and I'd love to make her understand, you know, maybe it's not possible, but mm-hmm. can I help her understand what we take, you know, commandment number two to mean, or what, you know, where can I direct her, or at least a response that I can give her?
Yeah, well, one thing, I guess this is more just between you and me. I find it hard to imagine how you can be friends with somebody who's so adamantly opposed to your faith, and your faith is important to you, and mm-hmm. it would seem like there'd be a lot of friction there. So good mm-hmm. for you. I mean, if you're able to have a friendship and deal with that, great. I'm happy to hear it, but it seems surprising to me.
Every opportunity that I've gotten, you know, we share the faith, and of course there are points with obviously the Blessed Mother and things, but I very gingerly and lovingly share things that are part of our tradition, mm-hmm. maybe trying to evangelize, but right, just as I can in a loving way, you know, of course. But
which is good, and I commend you for that. So just deal with the question at hand then. I'll do my best to offer some thoughts. Number one, it's the third commandment to keep holy the Lord's Day, not the second commandment. Ooh. Second commandment is don't take the name of the Lord your God in vain. But, you know, we're not splitting hairs here, but just for the sake of discussion. So maybe you could do it a couple different ways. You could say, you know what, you're right. I should have probably mentioned it to you, but as Catholics, we have what's called a Sunday obligation. And unless there's some real reason, a serious reason why you can't go to Mass on Sunday, we have an obligation to go to Mass on Sunday. It's a serious obligation. And this trip does not rise to the level of not having or of having a serious reason to not attend Mass. So mm-hmm. I understand if it's disruptive to your schedule or if it's just a distance you don't really want to go, I'll just get an Uber car. And just call Uber, get that on your phone. Yeah. And use that. Yeah. Now, she may say, well, you don't have to go to all that trouble. And perhaps the real reason will come to the surface. It sounds like maybe she's using the, well, I didn't realize you had those restrictions. It's sort of a, you know, she's not really saying, it sounds as though she's not really saying the real reason why this is bothering her. After all, you're her good friend. You're coming all the way down there. You bought a plane ticket. You're spending time with her. So it seems odd. If that were the real reason, it seems like an odd reason. I think there's a real reason below the surface. So if you suggest that you take an Uber, maybe she'll say, well, you know, I can drive you, and I don't want to go in, but I can sit out in the parking lot.
Oh, no, she'll let me take an, yeah, she'll let me take an Uber. Yeah, she. That's the kind of person. I think it's an opportunity to sort of bash the Catholic Church as Protestants. Mm-hmm. Many do, and it's just a little hostile undercurrent that we've had for quite a while.
Which is why I come back to my point, if you'll forgive my, you know, being so nosy, I guess, and that is, you know, why would you want a friend like that? I mean, if she's that prickly and that irritable and quickly triggered, as they say, because of your Catholic faith, is it really worth it? Mm-hmm. And for me, I would be thinking, no, this isn't really worth it. If you've tried to evangelize her, if she just is impervious to it, not interested, and she gets her digs in at you because you're Catholic, personally, I would be moving on. I mean, I don't know her or you, obviously, but just the way you're describing it to me sounds like my reaction would be, life is too short. And if I can't make any headway with this friend of mine, maybe the best thing to do is just take a breather. And maybe we won't be friends in the future, but why put yourself through that wear and tear?
Or give her a surprise by truth. That's my next hope. She'll read.
Well, there's always that. You can, that's like always an option, but maybe she'll fling it across the room. I don't know. Hard to say.
Right.
Well, I hope, Jackie, that this is a pleasant experience for you. I really do. And I'm not in the business of trying to break up friendships. I'm really not. Friendship is a beautiful, good thing. We need them. And sometimes friendships do take work. It's always better if a friendship doesn't require a lot of work to make it happen. But this sounds to me like it may be not a real firm foundation on which to build a friendship with her. So those are my honest reactions off the cuff based on what you told me, but maybe something to think about. I appreciate it, Jackie. Thank you. Safe travels. I'll be right back. You can call and get on the air, 888-914-9149. You like you some classic rock? Here's some classic rock for you right now. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Our sponsor, Christendom College, offers our listeners access to free online classes at getprinciples.com/truth. Acclaimed philosopher Dr. John Cutteback is teaching a class now, Understanding Human Nature, at getprinciples.com/truth.
1, 2, 3, 4.
This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and relevantradio.com.
Okay, we're back. The number is 888-914-9149. A note came in from Megan, listening on the Relevant Radio app. She says, what about that book you mentioned by an exorcist who explicitly mentions Harry Potter books? I was driving and couldn't write down the name, and I can't remember it. Help! Thanks for the great who you guys do. I get what you're saying, Megan. I get it. Thank you. Yeah, it was Father Gabriel Amorth, A-M-O-R-T-H, that's the name of the late priest, Italian exorcist in Rome. And although I don't remember now, because it's been years since I read his book, the book is called An Exorcist Tells His Story. And what I'm driving at is I don't remember now whether or not he mentions the Harry Potter books in that book. He might. But I do know that he was vocal about this in other venues as well, even if it's not in that book, in interviews that he gave, for example. I think one in Catholic World Report, for example. So my thought would be, if you get the book, you'll be able to find out one way or the other if he mentions Harry Potter. But you could easily locate where he says this by doing a Google search of his name and Harry Potter, Father Gabriel Amorth. And you'll see where in interviews he says that he thinks it's a bad idea to let kids read these books and see the movies because in his deep familiarity with the world of the occult and the way the evil one works, he says that magic or attempts to do magic are not at all uncommon gateways into this world and even gateways for the evil one to come into somebody by way of possession. So magic in general, casting spells, putting hexes on people, the evil eye, which is not so much a big thing here, at least maybe until fairly recently, but it is a big thing in some parts of the world, Italy among them. Tarot cards, Ouija boards, mediums, seances, palm readers, all of those things he talks about as being like, the way I put it is ringing the devil's doorbell. You ring the doorbell, he's going to answer. He's going to answer. He's looking for someone to invite in. So that's what I would recommend. Just do a quick search and you'll find it. And if we happen to do something along those lines and talk about it, we'll be sure to post whatever that is. Thanks for the email. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Eric in Brownsville, Texas. Good morning, Eric.
Hi, good morning, Patrick. I was calling because I wanted to see if you could say something about the historical significance of the sack of Rome in 1527.
That particular sack of Rome, nothing comes to mind off the top of my head. There have been many such invasions and pillaging of Rome. It's one of the reasons why the Emperor Constantine wanted to move east, because he saw what was coming from Northern Europe. But what specifically are you wondering about? Maybe there's some detail that will trigger my thoughts on this.
Yeah, it's because I was reading a book and this author, he's speculating that if Charles V's armies had not reached Rome and sacked it in 1527, that the Pope could have granted a divorce to Henry VIII and Britain might have remained Catholic, which would have changed everything vis-a-vis the whole, you know, Tree of Hate scenario. And so that's what he was arguing. And I was just wondering if you thought there was anything to that.
Well, that's an historical detail that I'm not deeply familiar with. I mean, I'm familiar with the general story about the invasion, but you mentioned the Tree of Hate. That's interesting. Are you referring to the book by the same title and the Black Legend?
Right,
and all
I am.
Those
you recommended to me, and I read, and I was really interested in it. So when I read this other essay, good. Where he, you know, kind of delved into that same issue about Britain,
right?
It piqued my interest, so I thought I'd see if you had anything to say.
Yeah, I first of all, for those who are listening to what you're saying, Eric, they won't know what you're referring to unless I explain it. So there's a book called The Tree of Hate, and I don't remember when it was written, maybe in the 60s, and it's an historical analysis of the way in which the British Empire used the black legend of the Spanish Inquisition, not only against Catholics, that was primarily something to use against Catholics because England had pulled away from the Catholic Church, but also in its geopolitical maneuvering and jockeying for position with Spain, it was a useful tool to try to turn people away from Spain as well as a nation, as in addition to Catholics as such. So the Tree of Hate is a term that's used to describe the way in which this hatred for Catholics, and it was commingled with hatred for Spaniards per se, was used so effectively by the British. So this, what you're raising here, Eric, it's an interesting speculation. There's no way to know what would have happened or what might have happened. And the Pope at the time of King Henry VIII, at least in terms of what I've read about it, he saw no grounds to grant an annulment because everything about the marriage that King Henry VIII had all the appearances of validity. And they didn't have, as far as I know anyway, they didn't have an annulment process as such in those days. So it was appealed to the Pope, and he says, well, you're both baptized. She's from Spain. She's Catholic. She's baptized. You're Catholic. You're baptized. You've consummated your marriage. So no, you don't really have any grounds for divorce, which is why I don't know, even if the sack of Rome hadn't taken place, and I guess that presumes that there would have been less pressure on the Pope at the time, that then he would have said, well, okay, we can pull some strings and, you know, I'll let you get a divorce. What a terrible thing that could have been if the Pope had compromised what Jesus taught on the idea, on the issue of divorcing and remarrying. That would have been a terrible, blatant contradiction. So as far as the speculation is concerned, I don't know what to make of that. Somebody who might have talked about this would be the late, great Dr. Warren Carroll. And if you liked the book, The Tree of Hate, I think you'll like his, 7-part series on the history of Christendom. And you just want to zero in on the particular volume, Eric, that talks about this time frame in the 16th century. So Warren Carroll is the author, and you want to look for his multi-volume History of Christianity and get the volume, probably one of the ones in the middle, that deals with that era. Thanks, Eric. Interesting question, no doubt. 888-914-9149. How about Francis now in Las Vegas? Good morning, Francis, and welcome.
Hey, Patrick. So I'm a revert back to the church, and I made my general confession and everything, but the last time I went to confession, and I remembered something that I forgot to mention, so I didn't receive the Holy Eucharist, and yeah, I suffer from scrupulosity, so I was just wondering, like, in that instance, like, should I go up for communion or should I wait? Because it's happened to me before in the past where I made confession.
I can help you, and I can help you not have this problem again. So the first and really the only question you have to ask yourself is, did you intentionally, and I'm assuming it was a mortal sin, right?
Yes.
Okay. So did you intentionally conceal it and not confess it in confession? Or did you honestly forget about it and you only remembered it after the fact?
Yeah, it always happens that I just remember it after. Okay. And like, so I'm waiting to go up for communion and I'm like, oh no, I can't go.
Okay, just hear me out, Francis. I've got your answer for you. Okay, just listen to what I'm going to tell you. If your answer is, honestly, I didn't remember it, it happened, I forgot it, and therefore I didn't confess it, but I remembered it a week later, you can go to Holy Communion. Here's why. Because you didn't commit any sin in forgetting the other sin, and so your sins were all forgiven. You received absolution. You're in the state of grace. And to remember a mortal sin doesn't put you back into mortal sin. It just means, oh, I forgot. So you have an obligation to bring that up in the next confession you go to. But you're good to go as far as receiving Holy Communion is concerned in the meantime. So in your deliberations, if you can say, yeah, I forgot about that one. And hopefully over time, whatever may be back in the past will be completely caught up. And you won't have to worry about this anymore. But let's say you do. Let's say it happens again. Well, ask yourself. It's a split-second decision. Did I intentionally conceal that sin, or did I just forget it? And if it's the latter answer, you're good to go. You can go to communion, and you don't have to scruple over this.
Okay. All right, yeah. Okay. That sounds good.
And you know one important way to fight scrupulosity? And you can conquer it. Is to train yourself to trust in God's love and mercy. Now, it doesn't mean, obviously, if you are in the state of mortal sin, it doesn't mean to play games and say, well, God understands and, you know, I'm a nice person. That's not what I'm talking about. Assuming, as you are doing, that you're being forthright and you're sincere, you want to be close to the Lord. So with all those things assumed. If you start feeling those feelings of, well, maybe he didn't forgive me, or maybe I, you know, maybe this was a sin, or maybe I need to confess it again, just you can spray Roundup on that weed by just repeating the Jesus, I trust in you acclamation. Jesus, I trust in you. Jesus, I trust in you. Or Jesus Christ, Son of God, Savior, have mercy on me. There are different versions of that. Jesus Christ, Son of God, have mercy on me. If you get in the habit of combating those scrupulosity thoughts by crowding them out, by basically pouring Roundup on that, spraying Roundup on it, they will eventually begin to dissipate. And that's a proven technique that the saints tell us really works. So give that a try, Francis. Thank you. Let's go to Patrick now. Oh, you know what, Patrick? I jumped the gun and I thought we were going to take the call, and then I realized the man's got to know his limitations. So we're going to come right back to you, Patrick, in New Jersey right after this. So please stand by. I'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
We are back. 888-914-9149. Cyrus, this is a question for you. It came in from Wade in Jacksonville. He says, what version of Abbey Road do you play for bumper music that has Pauline Pam but John Lennon counting before the riff? He says, is it just something spliced together? No, it's not something spliced together. Cyrus, go ahead and reveal.
Sorry, I cannot. A magician never reveals his tricks.
Yeah. So if I just say it's one of those alternative recordings when they were in studio, that would work as an answer, wouldn't it?
We were four guys. We were just a band who made it very, very big. That's all.
It's just the Beatles.
There is a new Abbey Road. It's like four discs long or something, and I think that's where I pulled that from.
I think it is. So I'm glad you decided to be honest with him. He's just a guy looking for answers.
One, two, three, four.
Yeah, Oh, right. And if I wasn't doing this show, I would enjoy doing the All Beatles all the time. But I don't do that show. I do this show. Let's go to Patrick now in New Jersey. Patrick, thank you for your patience and welcome.
Good morning, Patrick.
Yes, sir.
I'll just dive right in. Okay. I'm a married man of almost 34 years. And over the past 16 years, my wife has totally cut me off from marital relations. And that includes basic hugging and kissing, everything.
Uh-oh.
And, yeah, so we've gone to several counselors over the years, and I thought we had finally found the right one.
Solution?
Catholic counselor.
Is she Catholic?
And, yeah, she's Catholic, but she does not accept church teaching. She doesn't come with me to Mass. She yeah. did a few times years ago, but...
Well, this is... by the way, parents, time out here. Parents, this is not an appropriate topic for children, so please exercise great caution here and turn the radio down for several minutes if necessary, or shoo the kids out of the room into a different room where the Play-Doh is. But it's not a topic for them to listen to. So fair warning, ready, steady, go. So Patrick, may I ask, without being overly nosy here, how old are the two of you? You mentioned you were married for 34 years. I'm guessing, are you in your 50s?
Yes.
Okay. The reason I ask that question, and of course, if you subtract, what did you say, 16 years? So let's just say, you know, you're 55, you subtract 16 years... 45, so, you know, around 40 or late, maybe late 30s is apparently when this started. The reason I ask the question is because naturally, physiologically, when the libido begins to lessen for couples, that is sometimes the reason, and sometimes it's by mutual consent, where they just lose interest in that aspect of marriage. And that's okay if that's, if both spouses are okay with that. That's part of the natural arc of aging. But if it's one spouse who's saying no and the other spouse really wants that part of marriage, that's a, you don't need me to tell you this, obviously, but that's a really serious problem because neither spouse has the right to just cut that off indefinitely or permanently. You don't have the right as the husband. She doesn't have the right as the wife. And in moral theology textbooks, that's sometimes referred to or often referred to as the marital debt. And by that, it means that both spouses owe the other the right to that person's body as it was promised when the consent for the marriage contract was spoken. And by giving consent, you are giving consent to room and board and everything that that means, you know, or board in bed, rather, is the term, and everything that that means, up to and including the right to each other's bodies for the purposes of the marital act. So it's not a debt that can be demanded at any time for any reason. I mean, there are obvious limitations and restrictions. It's not where it's just the one or the other party must, like, drop what you're doing kind of thing, and it has to involve the respect and courtesy and take into account people's health and their mental state or their emotional state. There are a lot of things that go into it, but none of those things in any way ultimately combine so that one spouse can say, nope, we're not doing this anymore. That's a serious sin for either spouse to do that. So that's why I'm wondering if you found a Catholic counselor, was that made clear in the counseling sessions? Does she understand that? Or you said she doesn't believe in the church's teaching. Help me out here. What is her reason? What does she say when this issue comes up?
Well, she sent me some very good information about the marriage debt and how she was with me on this, and it's about saving souls and, you know.
Your wife sent you this information?
No. The counselor sent me this information.
Okay, good.
But she would not relay that good information to my wife. You know, she would not say, you know, what you're doing is wrong, you know. You know, charitably, of course, but mm-hmm. So, and she gave us some good activities to do together to try to get our relations started up again and mm-hmm. get back on track, different things that mm-hmm. we could do, activities, games, and yeah. but every, like a question and answer game, fun things that we could do, you know? Yeah. But everything turned into an argument. My wife would turn everything into an argument. And it was pathetic. But anyway, my wife cut off the counseling sessions and because she didn't want to pay the money anymore. So now I'm just stuck, you know? I'm just, like Jesus says, deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow me. And that's basically what I do and have done all these years.
And it sounds like you're heroically virtuous in this regard, Patrick. A lot of marriages would have just crumbled under the weight of this mistake that your wife is making.
I love my wife dearly, and the counselor mm-hmm. wanted to meet separately with us in individual sessions. And I didn't want to do that anymore. I don't want to gossip mm-hmm. and engage yeah. in that. But I told her that whatever counseling that we do together, I want it to be all of us together at yeah. once. You know?
That makes sense. Now, you sound like a super guy, Patrick, but in a situation that probably does not apply to you, but I'll just raise this issue for those who are listening. In a marriage where, let's say, the husband is violent and hurts his wife, and or maybe he's running around and violating his marriage in that way, there are circumstances wherein the husband or the wife, if she's the one doing it, forfeits their right indefinitely to the marriage act and to other aspects of marriage, like being able to live together or sleep in the same bed, etc. The church recognizes that there are some activities that would rupture that and deprive the offending spouse of those rights unless the other spouse decides to say, all right, well, I'll take you back or we can resume, etc. So I'm assuming that nothing like that is clouding the picture here, right, Patrick, where it's not like you beat her or anything like that, where she would have a right to do what she's doing, but it doesn't sound like that's part of what's going on here, right?
And I have said that to her too. I said, if I were a drunkard or I came home and beat you, and then I could understand, but I'm just a regular person trying to do the best I can. Mm-hmm. I'm going to work every day. We have children. We have grandchildren now.
It's a terrible situation. My heart really goes out to you, Patrick. Maybe you've shared this with her, perhaps not, but just this is a passage of scripture that addresses this topic. So this is in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Maybe you've heard it, but for those listening especially, I'll begin in verse 1. Now, this is for married people. Now, in regard to the matters about which you wrote, it is a good thing for a man not to touch a woman. But because of cases of immorality, every man should have his own wife, and every woman her own husband. The husband should fulfill his duty toward his wife, and likewise the wife toward her husband. A wife does not have authority over her own body, but rather her husband. And similarly, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but rather his wife. Do not deprive each other, except perhaps by mutual consent for a time, to be free for prayer, but then return to one another so that Satan may not tempt you through your lack of self-control. This I say by way of concession, however, not as a command. And then he goes into the ideal of chastity, and specifically celibacy. Celibacy has to do with not being married, incontinence, it has to do with not engaging in sexual activity, whether you're married or not. So have you shared that particular passage with your wife, or did the counselor mention that to her to show her?
She doesn't want to hear anything to do with the church, God, anything. And she says, I told her I cut back on the things that I do around the house because of this. Like I hired somebody to cut the grass because I'm just fed up. And some of the other things that I've always done, I slacked off a bit. And
does that get her attention?
Yeah, because she didn't want to pay the extra money. And I said, if things don't change, I'm going to just retire and dedicate myself to going to Mass every day and being the best grandfather I can be. And that's it. And she said, well, if you retire, we're getting divorced. The house is being sold.
What a nightmare.
Yeah.
Ooh, and she's just, she will not reason. You can't reason with her, apparently.
No.
This is beyond anything I have in my storehouse of knowledge to know what to recommend. I mean, the things that I did recommend, you've already tried those. You've already gone through that. And if she's being that stubborn and unreasonable, and there's no cause for it, in other words, you didn't do anything harmful to the marriage, I mean, obviously, you can't force somebody to do anything. So it's just a mystery to me why this would happen.
For all these years, you know, we go to family gatherings and get-togethers, and we meet with friends, and I have to pretend everything is hunky-dory, and, you know, but it's so hard, you know. And then you come home and to the cold shoulder, you know. But,
You know what?
Keep on keeping on, Patrick, and ask for your prayers. That's all.
You got them, man. You totally have them. And a lot of people right now who are going to be praying for you and your wife. I'm sure you've talked to your parish priest about this and asked for his advice.
Yes.
Yeah. There is in the church's law a provision for what's known as canonical separation. And I'm not a canon lawyer, and I don't play one on the radio, but I've read enough that I'm under the impression that your situation might be one of those scenarios in which a canonical separation would be permitted by the church, where you could say, you have so aggrieved our marriage, you have so injured our marriage by, not you, obviously, by doing what you're doing here, that I'm moving out.
Certainly not innocent in the fact that years ago I was right with her with the contraceptive mentality in that sinful behavior before I had the conversion and began praying the rosary and doing what I'm supposed to do. But she doesn't understand that, you know. And
that actually leads to another question, Patrick. The average human being has some level of sexual desire. I'm talking about adults here. So there's some level. Some have more, some have less. But most everybody has some amount of it. Do you think, is there any reason to think that she's satisfying that need in a different way? And therefore she feels like she can do this indefinitely because she's getting what she needs in a different way. I'm trying to put it delicately, but do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I don't see any evidence of that, though. You know, I've been vigilant and keeping a close eye on things, you know.
Well, Patrick, I wish I had something I could say, do this or say this or try this. And I must admit, this is beyond me, and I will pray for you. I promise you that. And I'm going to ask everybody right now, pray for a miracle in this marriage, that God would soften this woman's heart and restore this marriage. It's deeply perplexing. Patrick, thank you. And hang in there, man. I'll be right back.